This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
In the news this month, the expansion of the universe, a mature cluster found at high redshift, and the latest pictures of the moon's far side. Measurements of the expansion of the universe show that it is accelerating, an effect thought to be due to dark energy, something that counteracts the gravity of ordinary matter, but which has not yet been detected and whose actual nature is still unknown. Measuring the rate of this expansion and the expansion history, how the expansion rate has varied with time, is essential to our understanding of the evolution of the universe. This expansion rate has been measured in the distant universe using several different methods, including measurements from the cosmic microwave background, the echo of the Big Bang, and observations of thermonuclear supernovae. Predictions of the expansion rate in the local universe have been made using these results, but this requires various assumptions to be made about several unsettled questions in astronomy, such as the nature of dark energy and its effects on other material, the geometry of space itself, and the properties and distribution of neutrinos. Measuring the expansion rate in the nearby universe can therefore provide some information on these unsolved problems. But local measurements have their own challenges. Accurately determining distances is one major problem, with nearby distance indicators being used to calibrate more distant ones. Errors in nearby calculations are then propagated out to more distant objects, significantly increasing the errors in measurements of the expansion rate. Now, in a paper published in the Astrophysical Journal, a team led by Adam Rice at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore have measured this expansion rate more accurately than ever before. Their results use the fact that the absolute brightness of an object and its measured brightness as it appears to us here on the Earth can be used to calculate an object's distance. By carefully observing more than 600 examples of a type of star known as Cepheid variables, stars which vary in brightness with a period related to their absolute maximum brightness, located in the host galaxies of thermonuclear supernovae, exploding stars for which the maximum brightness can be determined, the team were able to produce an accurate distance ladder. This was then used to calculate the value of the Hubble constant, the number which describes the expansion rate of the universe. The number they calculated, 73.8 kilometers per second per megaparsec, fits well with previous measurements, but, due to the larger number of stars observed, has the smallest uncertainty yet, at just 3.3%, an improvement of 30% over previous results. This result, combined with recent data from other cosmology experiments, has implications for our understanding of the expansion of the universe. One idea, an alternative to the idea of dark energy, is the suggestion that the Milky Way may be located within a giant void, a relatively empty region of space some 8 billion light-years across. If we were located towards the centre of this bubble, galaxies accelerating away from us would be an illusion. But these new results are inconsistent with this hypothesis, still leaving the question of what dark energy actually might be. Following the Big Bang, it was some time before the universe cooled and began forming stars and galaxies. Over time, these young galaxies gradually assembled into clusters, continuing to evolve into the structures we see today, such as the well-known relatively nearby cluster in the constellation of Virgo. Studies of galaxies in such clusters show that the surrounding environment has a strong influence on a galaxy's morphology and star formation activity. But when in the history of the universe did such clusters actually form? The massive elliptical galaxies located at the centres of clusters are old and stopped forming stars a long time ago, although they continue to grow as material is pulled in from the surrounding cluster by a strong gravitational field. This infalling material largely destroys much of the evidence of how these galaxies evolved, so determining their history is difficult. One way round this is to observe more distant clusters, since we see them as they actually were far in the past, and use these observations to reconstruct a typical evolutionary sequence. A team of astronomers led by Raphael Gabat at Saclay in Paris have used infrared observations to locate a cluster of galaxies at a redshift of 2.1. Observed as a region containing many more compact red galaxies than would be expected by chance, the team also found strong X-ray emission from the same region. Such emission comes from the hot gas between galaxies within a cluster, and is a strong indicator of a gravitationally bound group of galaxies. By investigating the properties of the galaxies within this cluster, the group found that it is far more evolved than would be expected for a cluster at such a redshift, making it likely to be the most distant mature galaxy cluster found so far, implying that clusters dominated by massive elliptical galaxies and containing significant amounts of X-ray emitting gas were forming significantly earlier in the history of the universe than was previously known. And finally, as the Moon orbits the Earth, it always keeps the same face towards us because it is in what is known as a tidally locked orbit. It takes the same amount of time to rotate once on its axis as it does to travel once around the Earth. When the first images of the far side of the moon were returned by the Soviet Luna 3 spacecraft in 1959, the view was very different to what we are used to seeing on the near side. Rather than the large, darker areas we see on the near side, areas known as lunar mare, or seas, the entire far side more resembles the lighter areas of the lunar highlands seen near the south pole of the near side. Exactly what the reason is for this dual nature of the lunar surface has been an ongoing puzzle. The mare themselves are thought to be the result of large impacts on the moon's surface. Incoming rocks hit the surface, fracturing the crust and allowing the molten basalt underneath to flow upwards through the cracks and fill in the impact basins, producing the darker coloured flat surface of the mare. That such features are seen mainly on one side of the moon's surface and not the other is thought to be because the moon's crust is thicker on the far side, making it harder for molten magma to erupt onto the surface. But the question remains, why is the far side crust thicker? Several presentations at the 42nd Lunar and Planetary Science Conference, held in Texas during March, attempted to answer this question. The Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter has been imaging the moon from orbit since 2009, and its wide-angle camera has been used to image the entire surface at times when the sun was low in the sky, producing long shadows which can then be used to calculate the height of surface features and investigate the topology of the lunar landscape. The final global data set is yet to be completed, but a preview, released at the conference, shows the moon's far side in spectacular detail.